Great. Thanks, Jeff, Keith, and Jeff. Shawana, why don't we open up the line to take some questions?
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to pose a question, please press star one on your telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star two. Please press star one now. Your first question comes from the line of Scott Davis representing Barclays. Please proceed.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Hey, Scott.
Jeff, when you think about last quarter and the disappointing margins you put up, your confidence in the 70 basis points for the year seemed to be somewhat wavering, and maybe it seemed like a reach goal. I mean, putting up the 50 basis points this quarter, I mean, does that indicate to you an increased confidence that you're going to see this back half of the year margin ramp, particularly given what you saw in value gap?
Yeah, you know, Scott, it really does. You know, again, I think the teams have been executing well. I would decompose it a little bit. You know, the way we talk about margins, the value gap is on track to be significantly positive this year. Our SG&A, our simplification efforts, I think are just gaining momentum, so that looks good. R&D, I think, levelizes for the year. Mix levelizes for the year. And the power and water units are in backlog, you know. So, Scott, I think as we execute that ramp, and we feel pretty confident in the 70 basis point for the year. We still have a slight hedge in the numbers, and I just think we're building momentum.
Makes sense. And I know it's hard when you look at backlog and orders to just given the timing to figure out exactly when revenues are going to pull through. But when you really look at the order growth and the fact that you're getting, you were down, including wind, but excluding wind up 5%, you said. But, you know, you say in the slides not counting on environment improving, but the order book does imply that the back half of the year is going to have some unit volume tailwind. Am I reading that correctly?
Oh, yeah. You know, it definitely does. Just given the way the wind, you know, Scott, like you know, that just get looking at the wind profile, you know, if you look at power and water, it's going to strengthen in the second half. And the other businesses, I'd say, are already demonstrating some nice momentum. So, you know, things like aviation spares, which were a drag last year, have turned into a tailwind this year. Oil and gas, I'd say, you know, four or five segments, double-digit orders growth, even M&CS, I'd say better quarter. So if you just pick through one by one, you know, you're going to get some gathering momentum, I think, in the second half of the year.
Okay. And just clarification, the loss in Brazil, I assume that's the EBX, Higi Batista investment?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks, guys. I'll pass it on.
Thanks, Scott.
Your next question comes from the line of John Inch, representing Deutsche Bank. Please proceed.
Good morning, everyone.
Hey, John.
Morning, guys. So I just want to I have a couple of clarifications. So one, I just want to confirm, were there any gains that you would consider one-time within the industrial segments that might have helped to the 50 basis points of margin this quarter?
We had a small disposition in aviation, but it was immaterial, John. In total, across the industrial segments, the impact of gains was zero.
And then the rise, Keith or Jeff, in the year-over-year corporate, I mean, you did call out, right, the asset impairment of 1 cent, but was there any kind of an industrial, you know, reclassification in the way you look at the businesses that might have, again, I'm sorry to be nitpicky, but may have helped the margins, and then in turn, did that flow through the corporate line, or I mean, why again was the corporate up as much as it was?
There was no reclassification, but I can take you through corporate. If you look at the corporate second quarter number, it's $1,883,000,000. Remember, you got to take out the non-operating pension, which on a pre-tax basis is $661,000,000. Mm-hmm. So we're at $1,002,000,000 in the quarter. There's really three things. We have $280,000,000 of pre-tax restructuring in corporate, which is the 2 cents, and again, that is for the year will be against the NBCU gain. We had the impairment of $108 million in the corporate line, and then the third thing that's not really related to corporate, but it just flows in that line, is the G Capital preferred dividend for $135 million. So if you take the second quarter and you get to a run rate, you're basically at the run rate we need to be about $3 billion for the year.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Keith, can I ask you about WNC in Japan? We're still taking charges for it. And just remind us, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't there a statute of limitations in New York that prospectively kind of makes the run rate on WNC hopefully or – You tell me sort of much lower on kind of going forward. And then maybe this is for Jeff. Is there not an opportunity to pay off these Japan liabilities sometime early next year? I'm just wondering what – I realize it's still early, but, Jeff, what your thoughts are toward perhaps pursuing that kind of attack.
Sure. I think I can start with both of those for you, John. On WMC, yes, the statute of limitations runs 6 years from the date of the securitization, and we basically are – completed all the securitizations that came out of WMC have gone through that six-year period now, and I think that's why you see a slowing of the additional pending claims. And so we need to resolve these. We're in negotiation and discussion on the claims, and we're going to work our way through that as you go through the second half of the year, and we'll continue to update you. From a Japan perspective, there is a contractual discussion point in the first quarter with Shinsei, and we will have a discussion with them, and whether we can reach agreement or not remains to be seen, but there is an opening there in the first quarter that we'll be pursuing and negotiating with them.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Thanks, John.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague, representing Vertical Research Partners. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, good morning, Jeff.
Hey, just back on kind of the question of games. You said it kind of netted out, year over year in the quarter, but can we just put a finer point on what it actually was, TransDigm, and what other stuff you might have had?
Yeah, the aviation TransDigm benefit was immaterial in the segment, and I didn't say it netted out year over year. I said it was zero in the quarter in the segments.
Okay. I thought it was a net. I thought you said net neutral year over year.
No. In the quarter, the small benefit we got in TransDigm in aviation, if you go to the segment profit level, it was zero across the segment profits for the industrial businesses.
Okay, great. And shifting to power. Power price looked decent in the quarter. I just wonder if you could give us a little color around service price versus order price and what's driving that.
Sure. The power and water, if you look, the equipment pricing was up 3.5% in the quarter. The service pricing was down 0.3 and overall up 1.6. Thermal and PGS was down 2.2. Renewables was very strong, up 11. Those would be the biggest drivers.
And then just a little more color, if you could, on just what's going on in service. Europe, obviously, weak. Sounds like it got a little less bad, maybe. How do you see that plan over the balance of the year?
Yeah, I think, one bright spot in service, certainly in the U.S., if you looked at the U.S. PGS, the orders were up 29%. In the first quarter, we talked about some advanced gas path upgrades. The team did a pretty good job executing in the quarter. They had about 12 of them in the quarter, and that's a good sign for us in the U.S. service business. Revenues were up 20. In Europe, the PGS had a really challenging quarter, down 59%, Jeff. The fleet operating hours, we had reduced outages. It's U.K., Italy, and Spain. So we're seeing some positive benefits of the fleet in the U.S., and we're more than offsetting the drag that we have from the fleet in Europe right now in the PGS business.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
yep.
Jeff.
Your next question comes from the line of Stephen Wanoka, representing Sanford Bernstein. Please proceed.
Thanks, and good morning.
Hey, Stephen.
Hey, just a quick clarification again that on that corporate versus segment impact restructuring and other charges, those 3 cents, was any of that in corporate or was it all in the segments?
No, if you go to the corporate line, you adjust for the non-operating pension. Out of the $1.2 billion, there's $280 million of restructuring on a pre-tax basis that's industrial. There's another penny that's in capital in corporate. So out of the 3 cents, 2 cents is in industrial, and 1 cent is in capital.
But that 281 is counted in the is part of that 1883, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so that was at corporate. Okay.
Right, and so was the NBCU gain in the first quarter, and we said the restructuring would be in corporate through the year.
Just
right.
Repeat that, because I want to make sure everybody gets that right. On the NBCU gain.
Sure. In the first quarter, we had the NBCU gain. We made a set of decisions to lower our cost structure in the company. From an accounting perspective, you have to actually complete all the actions to book the accounting charge to reflect the downsizing that you're doing. And so not all that could happen in the first quarter. We have additional work to do to identify and complete the projects. So we had 4 cents of restructuring in the first quarter against the NBCU gain, and that left a net of positive 4 cents in that first quarter EPS. In the second quarter, we had a naked 2 cents after tax of industrial restructuring. And in the third quarter and the fourth quarter, we'll probably have another penny at least each quarter. So that for the year, Steve, basically it's a zero. It's in the corporate line. In the first quarter, it was a net positive. In the second quarter, it's a net drag. In the third and fourth quarter, it'll be a slight net drag.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Yeah, it does a lot. Thanks.
Good.
And then
good.
On the a little more clarification on the GE Capital side, guys, since we have a lot of GE Capital horsepower there now. just the CRE gain.
Before, I think.
No. It's always good, right? The commercial real estate gains, the $200 million you talked about. We continue to see an environment where you're getting these every quarter. How as you run down that book, what's your visibility to that going forward? And how long and sustainable it is?
Yeah, so we did have 200 in the quarter. And the team has done a pretty good job as we've reduced that book down to about $17 billion of our investment, of doing that as profitably as possible. It is going to get progressively more difficult to generate the same level of gains unless we continue to see improvement in the markets where we're selling these assets. We've been very focused in the U.S. That's where the recovery's been the biggest, the fastest. We're seeing some signs of life in Europe, in Northern Europe, and the U.K. and France, but there's still a long way to go there, and Japan's a little bit better. So I think there still will be the opportunity to generate gains. Whether we'll be able to generate them as we move down the next $17 billion at the same rate, I think, remains to be seen. I think that's going to be a little bit of a challenge.
Okay, and then on the provision side, they were at least a little lower than I was expecting. Maybe just comment on how you were thinking about the amount of provisions in the quarter.
Well, I think provisions came in about where we thought they would be. They were up about $300 million year over year. $200 million of that was associated with our retail business in the U.S., and when we went to that reserve model change that we completed in the first quarter, one of the outcomes of that is we removed the seasonality that we historically had in the second quarter. And so that didn't repeat year over year. And then we added $100 million of reserves in CLL, principally in our U.S. CLL business. So, I think provisions came in just about where we expected them. They were down sequentially because we made that final change in the retail reserves in the first quarter, which was like $600 million. So that's why they sequentially look lower.
Okay, and maybe just sneak one last in for Jeff. Energy management and intelligent platforms, does that continue to be a targeted growth area, both sort of acquisitively and organically?
Well, it is organically, I would say, Steve. There's been commentary about transactions, and even though we don't like to specific talk about companies, I would say when you guys think about what we've outlined in terms of the priorities for the company, the one transaction that's been rumored really doesn't fit our screen as to the kinds of places we're going to put capital. So is that a good way to answer your question, Steve?
Couldn't be more direct. Thanks, Jeff. I'll pass it on. Thanks.
Okay, Steve, thanks.
The next question comes from the line of Dean Dre representing City Research. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. And
best
wishes to Keith and to Jeff Bornstein and their new responsibilities. And Jeff Bornstein, since you're on the hot seat now, how about just some color. I know it was a foregone conclusion that GE Capital would be declared a SIFI, but just is there are there any consequences regarding capital requirements, reporting, and so forth?
Yeah, I don't, you know, we have been in preparation for this day for the better part of 2 or 3 years. We've had the Fed with us for the last 2 years. We have been running in parallel all of the processes you've seen the major banks running, whether that's stress testing, preparing ourselves with a recovery plan, and working early innings on a resolution plan. So I don't think incrementally it is anything that we won't be able to deal with. I think our capital is in very, very good shape. I think our processes are improving every day. So I don't think at the margin that the designation is going to mean all that much to the business.
Great. And then for Jeff Immelt, at EPG, there was a lot of focus about prospects for a staged exit of a business and how the proceeds would be used for buybacks and changing of GE's earnings mix. And can you give us any update as to where that process stands?
Yeah, I'd say the, you know, notionally, Dean, we're still on track for what I talked about at EPG. You know, again, I don't think we're quite ready to talk detailed specifics, but you'll be hearing from us in due time. But the notion, the strategy that we outlined at EPG is still on track.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Nigel Coe, representing Morgan Stanley. Please proceed.
Oh, thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Nigel.
Good morning, Nigel.
Yeah, first of all, Jeff and Keith, congratulations on your new roles.
Thank you.
So just wanted to go back to the price-cost benefit this quarter, the value gap of 293. How does that compare to the plan? And given that pricing and orders is improving, the backlog price is improving, raw material environment remains pretty benign, how does that develop over the balance of the year?
Well, you've seen our pricing on orders quarter after quarter, 6 quarters of positive OPI across the company. That's coming through in revenue this quarter. We had 1% positive price in sales. I think that continues. I think we've put it in the backlog, and with the OPI strong on the new orders coming in, I think you're going to continue to see pricing. I think the change that we've seen year over year has been a big improvement in deflation. You know, last year at the half we had close to $60 million of inflation, and this year we've got significant deflation. So I think, you know, we expect that to continue. We do a lot to lock in our purchases on a forward buy basis, and we're feeling pretty good about the value gap. Jeff's talked about it. I think that's going to be, as we show on the margins chart, a significant contributor to us getting to the 70 basis points this year. And as you listen, as we go business by business, you know, we talked about the value gap in just about every one of the segments being a positive contributor. So the teams have been focused on pricing. They're focused on delivering projects at the margins we quote are better, and the sourcing deflation has been positive for us this year.
This is going to be better than our plan, and I think that's where the source of our hedge is going to come from.
Okay. You think of a point or more of margin benefit in the back half of the year from price inflation. Obviously the power and water margins were pretty incredible given the sharp decline in revenues. And you call that the price value gap, obviously, and but then mix. And I'm wondering to the extent to which you benefited from some of these hot part upgrades on the gas turbines versus what you might characterize as regular MRO work on the install fleet.
Well, it was a positive for us. I mean, if you look at the service business, it was actually up slightly on op profit. So you know the net benefit of everything they did, whether it's the part sales or the upgrades and outages in the quarter, gave them a little lift. I think it's a positive. We're up on op profit even with the revenue being down a little bit. So services versus equipment was a benefit, certainly in the energy segment.
And then a quick one on the GE Capital dividend, $1.9 billion in the quarter, $6.5 billion for the full year. How do you expect that to phase over the balance of the year?
Yeah, we've got that loaded in evenly over the third and fourth quarter. So another $1.5 billion in the third and $1.5 billion in the fourth is the assumption today.
Great. Thanks a lot.
That's for the specials.
For the specials.
Yeah. And then 30% of our rights.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from the line of Shannon O'Callaghan representing Nomura. Please proceed.
Morning, guys.
Morning, Shannon.
Hey, Shannon.
Hey, so I just want to update on sort of gas turbine order expectations for the year. I mean, I think you've been talking about 120, 130. We're only at, you know, 32 here in the first half. Is that still the target? And if it is, you know, what are the things, you know, sort of where do those orders come from?
You know, Shannon, my hunch is that the overall market's not going to be quite as strong as we'd initially expected. So my hunch is that the order for the year will be between something like 100 and 115 in that range. And, again, still, they come in buckets. You know, I'd say there's still a fair amount of activity in the Middle East. China and Asia aren't bad. You know, we expect U.S. to be better this year than last, but at a small level. Europe pretty sluggish. Africa okay. But they tend to come in buckets. But my hunch is that's where the orders will come in.
I mean, you have pretty good visibility into those. Are there some lumpy things kind of in 2H to get there?
Yeah, okay. No, we do. I think, you know, we have a pretty formal process we go through on booking orders and stuff like that. So, you know, we kind of see, you know, have what I would say is pretty good visibility there.
And then just on these, you know, in the U.S. on the advanced gas pass upgrades, I know you had talked about, I think they got pushed out of 1Q and you're expecting them in 2Q. Was that, you know, was all of that kind of recognized in 2Q, or is there more of this to come, you know, in the second half? How do those work?
Yeah, there's still more to come in the second half. You know, and again, it's always between when we book the order and the revenue, but I think it's we've got something like 50, don't we, Keith, for the year?
We have a goal of 50 for the year.
Yeah.
We did 2 in the first quarter, 12 in the second. We've got 8 in the backlog, and we've got a number that are working. So I think there's a lot in progress. What we talked about in the second quarter, we had 3 of them that were working that slipped, and 2 of those actually booked in the second quarter, in addition another 10. So
yeah.
So I think the team has made a lot of progress there, and they're positioned probably for the first quarter 14 outages as you look at where they go. So they'll be later in the second half of the year, we think, Nigel, or Shannon, sorry.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Shannon.
Your next question comes from the line of Julian Mitchell representing Credit Suisse. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, Julian.
Hi, morning. I just had a question around the simplification and the cost cutting. You had sort of $474 million of cost cutting savings in Q2. It looks like there wasn't much back in Q1 at all. You know, back in the Q1, you talked about the majority of the cost savings coming in the second half. So I'm just trying to square away, you know, you've got $500 million of savings already in the first half. If you talked before about $1 billion or so,
yeah.
Is that billion number for the year a lot higher now? Because I guess you should, again, per the Q1, you should be getting most of the cost-saving benefit in the second half.
Yeah, we had actually $200 million in the first quarter, Julian. So, you know, that's how you get to the 468 or whatever at the half. You know, we're targeting at least $1 billion. And we have an intense focus in this company around simplification. There's a regular rhythm. Everybody's engaged. We're reducing P&Ls. We're putting things in centers of excellence. And we're going to look at more restructuring projects as we go into the second half here. If we have good returning projects, we're going to continue to evaluate those.
Good momentum. I'd be disappointed if it wasn't above $1 billion, and we've got a good backlog of projects.
Okay, great. And then within the services overall, you know, the just total company, the orders were much better in Q2 than Q1. You talked about, you know, revenues being obviously at the bottom end of the 2-6 range. Is that solely on equipment? You know, how has your view on the services revenue outlook for the year changed, you know, particularly given the big improvement in orders sequentially?
You know, the goal for services is still around 5% for the year, and that's the focus we have on it. So I think the mix is still mainly equipment-driven on the total revenue.
Got it. Thanks. And then lastly, just, you know, any color you could provide, you know, on Europe. You'd mentioned right at the beginning that it felt like a better quarter. Obviously, power's still bad, but just what you're seeing generally from your customers there.
We had obviously a big improvement in Europe in the orders. Remember, the first quarter is down 17. The second quarter we're up 2, and it was mixed. We talked about power being tough, but the positives, oil and gas was very strong. Oil and gas orders were up 37% in the quarter. A lot of those were up in the Nordic. We have a great position in oil and gas in the North Sea. Aviation was up 26%. It was a mix of both equipment orders as well as service orders. We've seen a rebound of services in the Europe poll. Services were up about 15% for aviation, and healthcare had a nice turnaround. The power and water was down, but some encouraging signs in some of the other industrial businesses here. Overall, up 2 versus 17 is a significant improvement, obviously, for us.
Yeah, just another nuance on Keith. I'd say the most short-cycle business we have in Europe is healthcare, and they had the first positive orders V, I'd say, in a couple of years probably, yeah. 3 years.
3 years.
So that's
4% up. Yeah.
That's a decent, but you know, I'd echo what Keith said earlier on the power gen usage side. It's still pretty weak in Europe, but it just seems to have net, in the GE world anyhow, stabilized in Q2.
Great, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Andrew Obin, representing Bank of America. Please proceed.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good.
Just a question on rising interest rates impact at GECC. How should we think about the second half, given the funding mechanism, and when do you think we'll see impact, if any?
Well, Andrew, I'd say, first of all, we've issued about $28 billion of debt year-to-date, in addition to the $1 billion preferred we talked about, so 29 total against the total year plan of 30 to 35. So most of our borrowing in the year is done. Fortunately, we're able to get out a little ahead of what's happened to benchmark rates in the last couple of months. Long-term, generally, higher interest rates have historically been good for GE Capital as well as most banks. Margins tend to expand. Spreads tend to expand vis-a-vis benchmark rates. So I would say generally, I think on a longer-term trend basis, higher rates are better for the business. I think from a liability perspective, we're in great shape. We run a match-funded book. So a short-term change in interest rates really shouldn't impact us much because our variable assets are matched with variable debt and our fixed assets with fixed debt. So we should be in pretty good shape.
Just a question on healthcare. Surprised how strong equipment orders were in North America in the quarter. And at the same point, you know, CMS released the 2014 proposed Medicare hospital outpatient payment regulations, and those seem pretty bleak. And how should we think about, A, the positive surprise in healthcare this quarter, how sustainable it is, and where do you think the business is going given where the regulations are going?
You know, I'd say, Andrew, look, I think our product line's pretty good right now, and our positioning is pretty good. You know, we're not counting on the U.S. market in healthcare to be super robust. And look, I think on the outpatient side, there's been pressure on reimbursements for a long time. So, you know, we're pretty cognizant of where it goes there. But, you know, I'd say the U.S. market feels like it's growing, you know, flattish to maybe up a couple points. And I don't see that changing that much.
So this quarter for you, it's market share again, you think?
You know, you never know until you see the NEMA data, but it seems like a better run rate for us this quarter, and then we'll see when we get the market data. It's usually a lag of a couple weeks, but, you know, I think, and then outside the U.S., in the growth markets, we're up 10%, and that's, you know, that's a decent profile for the healthcare guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
See you, Andrew.
Your next question comes from the line of Steve Tusa, representing J.P. Morgan. Please proceed.
Hey, thanks for having me in. Appreciate it.
Hey Steve, how are you?
Good. The orders price in power and water was, you know, 1.5%, yet the industry seems like it's, you know, obviously in relatively tough shape. Can you just walk through, you know, what drove that?
Well, I went through some of the pieces. If you looked at it, you know, for equipment, thermal was down 5.5%. So that's more in line with what you're seeing in the softness in the thermal market. But the renewables was up 12%. So I think oil, you know, those were the two biggest pieces. Distributed power was about flat.
What's driving that renewables dynamic? And you know, I guess just you know, pricing generally. You know, are you with obviously volumes down to you know across your business? Maybe Jeff, you can just from a macro perspective, but pricing you know holding in there. Are you know is this a you're kind of you know making a conscious choice to kind of you know walk away from some business. It does it really kind of not matter what the price is? It's more about you know kind of the level of activity that's out there, and that's just more of a macro question, I guess.
Well, in the wind business, we've got tremendous new product introductions, and we're delivering value to our customers. I think that's the biggest piece of the thermal or the renewable price index performance for us in 2013.
Okay.
You know, Steve, it's really kind of product by product. I'd say our service pricing is still pretty good, and that shows up in service margins. Your reference on the power gen market, it's a tough market, so, you know, you're seeing pressure there. Aviation, the pricing has been, you know, really pretty good. Same way as locomotive behind product performance. So it's kind of a mix, you know, business by business. But, you know, I think on the input cost side, we're not seeing any inflation, really, and so we see a favorable trade, let's say, in the short term between our ability to sustain decent pricing in our market versus incoming inflation.
Okay, and then just one last question on the power and water services stuff. Clearly good news that some of these you know upgrades and service work is coming through. Is that just kind of like the delayed reaction to you know the significant increase in gas utilization last year? And if that is the case, I mean, is this something you have a line of sight on into 14, or is this kind of a you know pent up demand being released this year as they kind of switch back to coal perhaps, and then you know you've got a little bit of a tougher comp next year? How do we think about that?
You know, my sense, Steve, is that the power gen service piece ought to be pretty stable between 13 and 14. You know, we've got a decent backlog of these advanced gas paths. We do have some turnarounds next year that are going to be helpful. So I view this as the ability to kind of have stable growth on the power gen service side.
It's really about economics for the customer.
Yeah.
We're developing additional new product upgrades for them that give them better efficiency and operating performance, and when we can demonstrate those economics, it's not really related to just whether they've run a little more from a cost of gas perspective. It's really about over the long term, what's the value of that asset for them.
How many did you do last year?
This is a new product introduction, so there have been upgrades through the periods, but this is a specific
more significant.
Yeah.
Okay, great, thanks.
Great, Steve. Thanks.
All right, Steve.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Feldman representing UBS. Please proceed.
Good morning.
Hey, Jason.
At healthcare, you called out the translation impact of the yen on the healthcare business in Japan. More broadly, have you seen any kind of competitive implications of the move in the yen, either in healthcare, energy, or any of the other businesses?
We really haven't. You know, a lot of our things we do are in aviation and stuff like that are dollar trades anyhow. But in you know, we haven't seen the Japanese companies becoming more competitive, if that's what you mean. And, you know, one of the advantages we have is we also make things in Japan and have a supply chain in Japan. So we're pretty naturally hedged as these things go on from a cost position standpoint.
Got it. Also, at healthcare seems to be the segment where pricing has been the most stubborn, and I certainly understand, particularly in North America and Europe, it's been a challenging market. But what do you see as needing to change before that improves? Is that something that's possible anytime in the kind of near to medium term?
You know, this is kind of a historical thing. You know, the healthcare business is a little bit on the electronics cost curve. You know, kind of half of it's physics and half of it's electronics. So, and you have a fairly rapid new product standpoint. So, you know, healthcare kind of grows its CM rate even when we show kind of the way we look at price. You know, it shows some erosion, but that's usually offset by sourcing and by margin on new products that are replacing the old ones. So it's kind of a unique character in our portfolio.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much.
Great, thanks.
There are no further questions at this time. Mr. Schomburg, do you have any additional remarks?
Yes, I'll just wrap quickly. Thank you, everyone, for joining the call today. The replay of today's webcast will be available this afternoon on our website. We're going to be distributing our quarterly supplemental data for GE Capital, as we always do soon. today. Our third quarter 2013 earnings webcast will be held on Friday, October 18th. As always, we'll be available to take your questions today. Thank you, everyone.
This concludes your conference call. Thank you for your participation today. You may now disconnect and have a great day.